Of the session to deal with minutes. We'll be acting on them probably once a week, generally on Mondays, of the minutes for the past week's Monday and Wednesday hearings. Senator Pappas.
Oh, thank you.
Yes. Does everyone have the minutes now who's present? Senator Lori moves that the minutes be accepted. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? Motion, ayes have it, the motion prevails and the minutes are adopted. The main agenda for the hearing today is to consider the confirmation of three individuals, the first of whom is Mr. Peter Bell, who is currently the chair of the Metropolitan Council, and his appointment is also sent to us for confirmation for the next term. We're pleased to welcome you to the committee. Mr. Bell, and if you would, we do have some information about you, but if you would care to tell us something about the work you've been doing, and certainly in the future, we will ask you to come back and talk in more detail about the operations of the Met Council and budget and so forth and our oversight role.
Madam Chair, thank you for the opportunity to come once again before the committee. As you stated, currently I am chair of the Metropolitan Council, and it's the governor's request that I again serve as chair of the council. I know all of you are aware of the council. It is a large organization. We have about 3,800 employees, a budget of about $650 million. We operate in a number of key areas, ranging from regional land planning to operating the transit system to operating the wastewater a treatment system, planning for and funding the parks, the regional parks. I feel that the last 4 years have been significant. We have a number of accomplishments that I am quite proud of, and I'd like to take a minute and just list a couple of those and then perhaps take another minute and talk a little bit about what I would hope to do in the next 4 years, and most importantly, entertain any questions or concerns that members of the committee might have. I think one of the things that I'm most proud of as chair of the Met Council, quite candidly, is moving forward the transit agenda in this region. As all of you are aware, we opened up the Hiawatha Light Rail line, I think, to significant public acceptance and success. I have continued to state that this is one of, if not the most successful, public project in the last 25 to 50 years. Our ridership far exceeded what our projections were, and those projections were not fudged or lowballed in any way. They were mandated by the federal government. We were anticipating at about this time 25,000 riders per day, and we are about a third above that. In August, we had 1 million riders that month. And I think that the overwhelming success of the Hiawatha Light Rail Line has opened up the possibility for and the reality of the North Star Commuter Rail Line, and what will be my number one goal as Met Council Chair in the next term, which is the Central Corridor. In addition to that, we moved forward the transit agenda in terms of our bus system. That is and will remain for the foreseeable future the backbone of our transit system. When I came to the Met Council, we provided about 69 million rides a year. Now we're up to about 74 million rides a year. And I would remind committee members that was in spite of a very long, difficult strike, numerous fare increases, and route restructuring. We were still able to advance our transit agenda. We have increased our park and ride slots by about just about 25%. It is truly an example of that old hackneyed phrase, build it and they will come. We simply cannot build them fast enough. If you're not in most of our park and rides by 8 or 8:15, you don't have a spot. The transit agenda, I think, has moved ahead very nicely under this administration and under the Met Council. In addition to that, there are a number of issues that I inherited probably in our land planning area, not the least of which was the Lake Elmo issue. I am pleased to report to this committee that we resolved that issue satisfactorily. We had a similar issue with Minnetrista that was resolved satisfactorily. One of my goals for the next 4 years is the comp plans that are due in 2008. As you know, the 189 municipalities in the 7-county rate region must submit a comp plan every 10 years, and 2008 is when they will be submitted. We have another area that I'm very proud of is we maintained our AAA credit rating. I think your credit rating is a proxy for leadership and management, and that's something that I'm very, very proud of. We have dealt with a number. Our wastewater system, I think, is still a world-class system. The rates in our wastewater treatment system, we have 8 plants throughout the region. We process wastewater for about 104 of the 189 communities, and our wastewater rates are about 25% under the average. For the next 4 years, there are a number of things that I would like to pursue. I mentioned the number one goal that I have, which is the Hiawatha Light Rail Line. We have submitted an application to be allowed into preliminary engineering. As you know, Madam Chair, Central Corridor, I'm sorry. Thank you. As you know, that there are a number of phases to a light rail project. Preliminary engineering, we have submitted our application, have been approved to go into preliminary engineering for the Central Corridor. We will then go into final design, secure a full funding grant agreement, and construct the line. There will be many twists and turns to this project, hopefully no near-death experiences, but we are very committed to moving that forward. A second goal that I have, Madam Chair, is to move our parks agenda forward. It is my hope to secure private dollars for land acquisition. Currently, we have 53,000 acres of parkland. In our park system plan, we want to grow that to 70,000 acres. We have 177 miles of trails. It is our intent to grow that to 877 miles of trails. The dollars that we bond for and that are provided for the state will be inadequate to get us from where we're currently at to where we aspire to be. And one of the ways I hope to do that is initiate a private fundraising effort. A third effort that I hope to be very aggressive in is an energy saving effort. We have developed a close working relationship with Dean Eldy at the University of Minnesota to work both with our wastewater and treatment system, and in short order I'll be announcing a number of initiatives there. The final point that I'd make is that I really do hope to engage. We meet with adjacent counties on a twice-a-year basis, and it would be my hope, this will be perhaps a stretch goal of mine, but to place some park and rides in some of the adjacent counties, which I think would be advantageous to those counties as well as residents in the 7-county area. And with that, Madam Chair, a little bit about the accomplishments in the past 4 years, what I hope to accomplish in the next 4 years, I will stand for questions.
Are there questions for Mr. Bell? Senator Day? Senator, we are so happy that you have joined us.
I guess we'll let him tackling him on that issue. Entertainment train. You know,
Senator
I
Day?
The train to nowhere,
Senator
Chairman,
Day?
But it's really the entertainment train now.
Senator
Madam
Day?
Chair.
Senator Pappas?
Madam Chair, since I've raised my hand and asked to be called upon, I think
yes.
You should call upon me.
I am calling upon you.
Thank you. Mr. Bell, when you talk about energy savings, are there things that you can do with your budget?
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, we do, first of all, we use ultra-low sulfur fuel. That is a major step forward. We are the largest user of fuel in the state of Minnesota, and we were using low sulfur fuel, and we entered into an agreement with the PCA to use ultra-low sulfur fuel. There was a concern that that would be more costly, but in effect, we are getting it at a comparable price for the low sulfur fuel. We are going to experiment using E85 in our buses. We have ordered, I believe it's 25 hybrid buses as well, that are going to be both diesel, use diesel and electricity. And the third point that I would make, Madam Chair and Senator Pappas, is one of the initiatives that we have at the University of Minnesota is really a recalibration of our engines. I'm going to get over my head very, very quickly here, but that will reduce significantly the fuel consumption when the buses are idling. And we are in the very preliminary stages of discussions with Cummins Engine and the University of Minnesota to that end. That's one of the projects that I'm very excited about with the University of Minnesota.
Senator Pappas.
Madam Chair, Chair Bell, is it possible to outfit, I'm not quite sure the technology, but to have your buses so that people could use their computers on a wireless basis?
Wi-Fi.
I've actually heard of that in some other...
Mr. Bell.
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, that is something that is under consideration. One of the things that we are also very interested in and in our very preliminary stages of discussion is with the City of Minneapolis, who is going to have this Wi-Fi, regional Wi-Fi system. Many other municipalities close by are also considering using that. We want to make sure there are a number of, the term I would use is compatibility questions, but that is something that is under active consideration.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Bell? Mr. Bell, I want you to know that on behalf of my constituents, I thank you for the job that you're doing, and I look forward to your continued service to the people of this region and the people of Minnesota. Senator Larson.
Madam Chair, I move that the committee recommend that the appointment of Peter Bell to Metropolitan Council Chair be confirmed.
You've heard Senator Larson's motion recommending that Mr. Bell be confirmed as a recommendation of this committee as chair of the Metropolitan Council. Is there discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed? The motion prevails, and the recommendation is so noted. Congratulations.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you very much.
The next consideration is the appointment to be confirmed of Commissioner Dana B. Badgero from the Department of Administration. Welcome to the committee, Commissioner, and we're pleased to have you reintroduce yourself to the committee for the purpose of confirmation.
Madam Chair and members, my name is Dana Badgero, and I am privileged since October of 2004 to have served as the Commissioner of Administration, and I'm even more privileged and proud to have been reappointed by the Governor to serve another term. Just by way of a CV, since I didn't provide you one, I'll just give you quickly. I have a degree in English from Principia College in Illinois. I have a law degree from the University of Missouri, and I have an MBA from Loyola College of Baltimore. At present, I am a student on leave of absence from United School of Theology, where I'm pursuing my master's in divinity. This is, as some of you may know, my second term as Commissioner of Administration, having served from 1991 through 1993 under Governor Arne Carlson. At that time, I was on leave of absence from Honeywell, and my professional career has largely been with Honeywell, where in 2001, I retired after 27 years with that company. And I had a fabulous career with Honeywell. I was very, very fortunate to have been at the forefront of a number of reforms in that company, including being vice president of government contracts in the mid-'80s, at the time when a lot of government contractors were undergoing scandals and investigations. In addition, I was Honeywell's first woman general manager, having been the general manager of a global solenoid valve company headquartered in Hartford, Connecticut, and Geneva, Switzerland. I was also general manager of the facility, the avionics sensor business, which is at Stinson Ridgeway, just off of 35W here in Minneapolis. And then finally, my last job with Honeywell was as global vice president of operations, where I was responsible for 23 factories around the world, including three in China, as well as all of its distribution centers, customer call centers, quality, Six Sigma, and Lean Enterprise. But having said all, a little interim excursion following my retirement. For about 2 years, I was a vice president and general manager for a wonderful little firm in Eden Prairie called MTS Systems, a manufacturer of automotive test equipment, where I was general manager of a motor business, industrial motor business, headquartered in New Ulm in Pennsylvania and in Germany. But I think what we want to talk about here today is my experience as Commissioner of Administration. And so in October of 2004, when the governor asked me if would I come back and do a job I'd done before, I didn't hesitate, because I will tell you that working in state government and working for that incredibly diverse and wonderfully challenging Department of Administration has been the best job of my career. The governor also asked if I would be if I would lead the governor's Drive to Excellence, and I have served as chair of the sub-cabinet of the Drive to Excellence since October of 2004, and we're very proud of our accomplishments, but I think that's another hearing. We have a number of new projects that the governor has recently chartered under the Drive to Excellence, including, just to give you a little taste, projects around enterprise training and development and succession planning or workforce of the future, because we know the challenges we're going to be facing in the state workforce as 40% of our population is eligible for retirement in just a few years. So let me just simply close by saying I have had a wonderful career, but to reiterate, this is the best job I've ever had, and for a whole lot of reasons, but not the least of which is the employees. I am blessed in the Department of Administration with any number of very innovative and talented employees whose I am every day convinced that they come to work to make a difference, and I believe they are making a difference. So I would be privileged for the next 4 years to lead that group.
Thank you, Commissioner. Are there questions of Commissioner Badgerow? Well, also a question. Senator Pappas, thank you.
Madam Chair, I just wanted to make a comment that Commissioner Badgerow was kind enough to speak to a group of Israeli women leaders that Madam Chair knows that I hosted in our
Chair, Senator Pappas, thank you very much. It was my privilege. They were very interesting women.
Thank you, Senator Pappas. I also want to express my appreciation for the service you do to the people of Minnesota, and I am reminded that these are public hearings, and would ask if there is any public comment to be made on the appointment, the confirmation of Commissioner Badgerow. Seeing none, Senator Day.
Madam Chair, I would move approval.
Senator Day moves that the committee recommend that the appointment of Dana B. Badgerow to be Commissioner of Administration be confirmed. Is there any discussion of that motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion for the committee's recommendation is adopted. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I look forward to working with this committee.
Next, we have Mr. Gopal Ghana. Mr. Ghana is the State Chief Information Officer of the Office of Enterprise Technology. Mr. Ghana, welcome to the committee, and we also are pleased to become reacquainted with you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Gopal Khanna. I'm the state CIO. It is indeed a great honor and privilege to be here today to present myself in front of this committee. As you're well aware, I currently serve as the state CIO. I joined the governor's cabinet on August 15th of 2005, and the last 18 months and 2 days have been indeed very exciting. Exciting because we have before us a huge opportunity to transform how government operations are run and position our state for the 21st century. We also have a huge challenge before us, challenge of demographics, wherein we will lose a very significant amount of our workforce over the next 15 years, therefore seriously creating threats to our operating environment, government operating environment. It's a huge opportunity to position our state, as the governor so ably pointed out earlier this afternoon in his State of the State message, talking about the iPod generation and their demands and needs to give them a government operation that provides services 24/7, not during the hours of 9 to 5. That in itself would not be enough. Over the last 18 months, I've had a great pleasure to work with a lot of people across all agencies, with the legislature, and people from the private sector. And there's a unanimous belief that time has come where Minnesota can indeed position itself for the 21st century by reinventing and transforming government operations. We are at a tipping point where technology is mature enough and gives us the competitive advantage to use it to achieve that end objective. The governor has put forth before us a very bold vision of change and transformation, and thanks to the legislature in 2005, we do have an enabling legislation that allows the state CIO to further that effort. It's been a privilege to serve the state, and I feel honored for having that opportunity over the last 18 months and 2 days. And if approved, I'll be privileged and feel humbled to serve my state again. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Khanna. Are there questions? Mr. Khanna,
Madam
Senator
Chair,
Vickerman.
When you get around to the confirmation, I'd like to move it. But first, there might be some more questions that people want, but first time I met you, I saw a star there, and I told you that. You're open. You're always willing to visit with all of us with a smile, and that's not the easiest thing to do in this place. But you always have been. And I trust you so much, I'd even let you figure out my cell phone because I can't figure it out. Grandkids can. So when that time comes, I like to move the confirmation. It's an excellent, excellent choice.
Are there other questions? And Senator Vickerman, I had previously spoken with Senator Gerlach, so maybe it can be a joint motion from the two of you.
Oh, that's okay. No, that's fine.
Is it okay? Okay. But then I'll call. Thank you, Senator Gerlach. I'll call on Senator Vickerman then at the proper time. Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Khanna, could you tell, I'm new to this committee, but could you tell us a little bit about your background and what you were doing before you came to take up?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, please forgive me for excluding that. I didn't mean to do that. Certainly, by way of background, I have an undergraduate degree in economics, mathematics, and political science. I have a graduate degree in MBA from University of Maine. I come from the private sector. Bulk of my life has been in the private sector. I started my career in New York with money financial services in the financial sector, and I've been very lucky and fortunate to have a chance to work in various aspects of corporate America. And I moved to Minnesota with my family in 1990 to join American Hardware Insurance Group, a local property and casualty insurance company, in 1990 as the vice president of MIS and operations. I disengaged from American Hardware Insurance Group in 1995 and from my corporate career to pursue entrepreneurship and the American dream. It was exciting to launch a couple of technology ventures and be part of startup ventures. In 2002, I was asked to join the President's administration in Washington, D.C., and I joined President Bush's administration and served at the Peace Corps, a preeminent organization established by President John F. Kennedy in 1961 as the CIO, and subsequently became the CFO of the Peace Corps as well, and disengaged to move on to join the Executive Office of the President, and then received the call in 2005 I was delighted to come back home and serve the governor in his cabinet in August of 2005. My family lives in Edina. We have two children, a daughter who's 24, and reminds me every day that we must have 24/7 government. We have a son who's 17 for college. My mother lives with me, and my wife is a consultant with Accenture.
Any other questions or comments? Then we'll take the motion from Senator Vickerman that the committee recommend that...
Madam Chair, did you say that Gerlach...
Senator Gerlach thought it should be from you.
Okay.
Senator Vickerman moves that the committee recommend that the appointment of Gopal Ghana to be the state chief information officer of the Office of Enterprise Technology be confirmed. Is there further discussion? Is there public comment? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Vickerman's motion, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. The ayes have it, and the motion prevails. Thank you very much.
Chair, members of the committee, thank you so very much.
The final item on our agenda is to hear from Mr. Hamill of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. A few days ago, there was an item in the press regarding the repairs to the runway that was going to occasion a rerouting of flights so that the noise issue will be affecting different neighborhoods for the periods, was it the construction period of April to October or something like that for two consecutive years. And we thought that since this is a concern to the metropolitan area that it might be a good idea to hear right away before this starts in this coming April to get a head start on understanding what the impact of that's going to be and what the MAC is, just how they're going to proceed. I have also spoken briefly with representatives of the MAC to arrange a visit to the airport for those who are interested, like myself, and in particularly to if it's convenient and not a safety issue. I think that going in the tower is just one of the most fascinating legislative experiences I've ever been. So I hope that that will be possible if all other conditions are met. So we don't like airport noise here. You understand that, Mr. Hamill? And we don't like it no matter where it is. But we want to hear what it is that's going on out there and who's going to be noticing the different noise patterns and to give us some comfort about the project, if you will.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, my name is Jeff Hamill. I'm the Executive Director of the Metropolitan Airports Commission. And with me today is Gary Warren, who is Director of Airport Development and responsible for this construction project. Just by way of introduction, because Gary is going to take you through the handout that you've just received, let me just tell you that over the course of time, we get into challenges where we have to do work on our major runway surfaces. And as you'll learn in with Gary's remarks, the center core of this runway needs to be replaced. It's been identified by both MAC and by the Federal Aviation Administration as a project that needs to be done now. And as a result of closing one of the two major parallel runways for a couple of months for this construction project, we have to realign traffic and send airplanes where they normally do not course. And as a result, neighbors near the airport who normally don't have direct overflight or see shifting traffic may very well experience some increased noise impact. There may be some benefit for the folks off the end of the existing runway that's under construction, but again, that's a temporary situation. We are, as I know you are, Madam Chair, well aware of the fact that we work pretty hard on noise issues. It's highly controversial. No matter what decision you make, someone's going to be benefited, someone's going to be disbenefited and experience unfavorable condition. But we continue to work on the issues. The good news here is that this is a temporary situation. It is a necessary improvement to the airport, and we will do everything we can to mitigate the noise as best we can in this process. But I think it's best if we just move right ahead and let Gary kind of take you through the project itself, first the construction elements and then some of the noise impacts as we see it and timing, and then whatever questions you may have, we'd be happy to respond.
Thank you, Mr. Hamill. Sir, if you will identify yourself for the record, we are pleased to have your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Again, my name is Gary Warren. I'm Director of Airport Development for the MAC. I've been with the MAC about 17 years and have worked a lot with our airfield program, most notably managed the construction of the new 1735 runway. The handout that I presented here today, and I appreciate the committee members' time in this regard, is a very quick overview of a project that is a two-month project to reconstruct basically 3,100 feet of the center section of the south parallel runway. The front page there highlights the location of this project in orange. And just maybe as a point of reference, Minneapolis-St. Paul International has two parallel runways, east and west primarily. This is the south parallel runway. We also have a crosswind runway, which is our longest runway, that being 11,000 feet. And then on the left side of your first page there, partially shown is the new runway 1735, which is 8,000 feet long. So this runway we're talking about this year is a 10,000-foot-long runway, which is a very busy runway and very important runway in our operations, so we are very sensitive to. Okay, the terminal is just off of the right edge of the orange there and just above that. It's between the two parallel runways as a point of reference. On the next page, I just wanted to brief the committee members here of why this is a necessary project. It's actually been in our program, the 2010 program, our capital program, since 1998. And we, up to this point in time, have been keeping this runway segment in operation by doing some very timely and aggressive nighttime management of the pavements and have been working on this pavement since 1990. We've spent over $50 million on this particular pavement, and the center segment we haven't been able to get at because the delays to the operation would be so significant that it would not be manageable or it would be very problematic. So with the opening of the new runway 1735, in the schedule of events, it was planned that this center section would ultimately be taken out of service and then reconstructed in a timely fashion. Also, as a point of reference, the west side and the east side, the east third and the west third of this runway, the white pieces on your first graphic there, were reconstructed in 1998 and 1999, and we kept about 6,000 feet of the runway active, which helped to mitigate some of the airspace adjustments that had to happen. But some of you may recall that we did use the crosswind runway, runway 422, to accommodate the flights that could not depart on the south parallel because of the construction. So we actually have had to do this in the past, and obviously we come at it as aggressively as we can to mitigate the or minimize the impact. But it's something we're very familiar with, and from an engineering standpoint, we are very interested to get this piece of pavement taken care of. Mr. Hamill referenced that the FAA has given us an order, actually, on the condition of this segment of pavement, which originally dates back to the 1960 vintage when the terminal first opened. And your graphic, the third page in, basically shows you in very schematic form the comparison of the existing pavement, which is on the left side of your chart, which is basically about 8 to 11 inches of concrete overlaid with a similar amount, roughly, of bituminous. So we have this combination of materials out there, and it was put down basically on the existing materials at the time. And it has actually served us well with a lot of maintenance over the years. But on the right-hand side, you'll see what our new pavement section is, where we actually put in about 20 inches of concrete on top of another 4 feet of conditioned subgrade. Your highway pavements, for example, are maybe 9 inches thick of concrete.
Mr. Warren, I mean, I can see it's deeper and all that, but what advantages will we see by having 20 inches of concrete rather than this other method of construction? And what is the length of time that you expect it to last?
Madam Chair, those are good questions. The 20 inches of concrete, which the whole pavement section really is looked at, the concrete, the crushed limestone, and this 3 feet of sand underneath to provide the full pavement strength that we're talking about here. And with the increased traffic and heavier aircraft that have been flying and the frequency of the loading here, these pavements, the new pavement section, we would say is a 50 to 70-year pavement. And obviously all pavements take some maintenance, but nighttime-type maintenance.
Mr. Warren, is this construction required by the FAA, given the amount of traffic and the weight of the aircraft, or is this just state-of-the-art construction? I mean, they must have some requirements and standards that you have to meet. Is this the standard, or is this better than the standard?
Madam Chair, this meets the standard of FAA. It is designed, it gets very complicated based on the type of loading. You wouldn't put this size of a pavement section, for example, at a smaller airport, a reliever airport, for example.
We don't need it at Crystal, in other words.
No, ma'am, we don't. Not yet. It is, I mentioned briefly earlier, the FAA last fall, we had problems with the bituminous that overlays the concrete out here in that with the hot August weather and such, and this pavement is in a very critical turnoff area of the runway. So it takes a lot of turning movements, and the bituminous with the hot conditions was actually shoving, as they say, and the grooves in the pavement were closing, which leads to a real problem as far as hydroplaning is concerned and braking action for aircraft. So we were under actually a letter order from the FAA that if we did not bring this pavement up to proper friction standards, that we were going to have to close the runway. And so we responded with a $300,000 spur-of-the-moment project last fall to be able to put it back up to standards, albeit on a temporary basis, to get us through the winter.
Thank you.
The project in history, as I was mentioning earlier, dates back to our 2010 program in 1998. And actually was alluded to in the environmental impact statement that was done on the dual track planning process for the airport. And the final record of decision that was issued by the FAA on the project, on the dual track project, which indicated that runway 1735, while its main use by far is to have departures to the south and arrivals from the south, that there were instances, weather conditions, construction, things of that nature on a temporary nature that were noted that the runway 1735 could be used if needed for arrivals from the north and also departures to the north. So in this scenario, this project, which is also mentioned in the agreement with the city of Minneapolis on the third runway agreement, has been noted as a acceptable use for the runway because of the temporary need for the use of runway 1735 to accommodate the airport traffic. If we did not use runway 1735 to help and the rest of the active runways to help mitigate this, then we would have some severe reduction in service to the airport and extensive delays that would also be very intolerable.
So, Mr. Warren, as I recall, there will be delays if the press article was correct, and how much delay are we looking at?
Madam Chair,
a little bit more detail about that.
I didn't have the privilege of reading the press article, but the delays that we've quantified, actually, we use a computer model here that we used in 1998 and 1999 that is actually an FAA model and has a lot of, I think, credibility in the industry for quantifying delays and also for helping us to manage the airspace. That model, which is based on a lot of inputs, none the least of which is what the airlines have told us that they expect to fly as far as fleet, type of aircraft, frequency of aircraft, and also is very dependent on wind conditions. That model has estimated that the delays associated with this project would be no more significant than the delays that the airport experienced before we opened the new runway 1735 in October of 2005. It also has given us an important...
So it all depends. Is that kind of the answer?
Madam Chair, it all depends with some very calculated estimates, I would qualify. That picture also gave us a very interesting glimpse into the future, that we have a rare opportunity. If there is any benefit to airline bankruptcy, it is the fact that we are currently experiencing reduced airport operations. Landings and takeoffs at MSP are down considerably from what they were forecast to be at this time. And as a result, this is the time to do this project. If we wait into the future, not only the risk of having the payments come apart on us is a problem, but also the fact that the delays, even with using the creativity of all the active runways, we most likely wouldn't be able to tolerate this. The schedule that's contained in your handout, I would emphasize we have a lead time here. Obviously, the project is being advertised and getting a contractor on board well in advance, so that on August 13th, when the runway is closed for this construction, that the contractor will indeed take the runway and be using it, and the first step is to demolish these old pavements. We have put penalties on the contract for this, $50,000 a day if the contractor isn't on the runway when we have it closed, and similarly on the back end, which we're estimating around October 17th, the 2 months that the runway would be reopened, it's $100,000 a day penalty to the contractor if he does not complete the work in that timeline. So we have some, I think, some pretty severe penalties there, which we expect will result in great performance. I should caution you that our completion date with all airfield projects or outdoor projects, if you will, in our environment is dependent on weather conditions. We can only pave during good weather, so to speak, not if it's raining. So there is some allowance in here. We count actual good days of construction, and we're estimating there's 50 days of actual construction here, which when you put it together with some weather days gets you to October 17th. So if it's a day later than that or before, it gives you an order of magnitude when this runway would be open. It could be open before that. So that's the schedule. The next graphic will show you the flow pattern that we expect as far as the utilization of the airport. Southeast flow really relates to how the airport runs relative to wind conditions. When we have winds out of the southeast in that flow configuration and without the use of the south parallel runway, we will be using the runway 17 approach from the northwest corner of your graphic there, the red arrow, which is an approach that will be coming in from downtown Minneapolis. Also, the other red arrow there to the right, runway 22, will be used. Those will be the two main arrival runways in the southeast flow configuration. Similarly, departures will be operating on runway 12 left, which is no different than what they do today, and there will be some on runway 22 for the departures, but the majority of the departures will be on 12 left, which will not be that significant of a change. So the most notable difference in the southeast flow configuration, which quite honestly is the best condition for us to be in as far as maximizing the capacity of the airport and minimizing delays at this time of the year, is arrival stream coming in from downtown Minneapolis between Interstate 35W and Hiawatha into the airport. The next graphic shows you the northwest flow configuration. So when the winds flip around, in this scenario, we would be using departures off of runway 17, off of runway 35, the other end, and off of runway 4 to the northeast of the airport. Arrivals would be on runway 30 right, which is would be no difference than today, and then also on runway 35, which would be no difference. So that is the most significant change in the airspace, and a lot of it will be more visual change from seeing airplanes where the public isn't used to seeing them the way the configuration is today. But there are other configurations depending on bad weather and such that I won't bore you with, but these are the main scenarios that we are looking at. We have slotted the project for this time of the year also to take advantage of better weather as far as the construction is concerned. We've looked at weather probability also for visual flight conditions, which maximizes our efficiency at the airport. So we've worked well, I think, to try to get this in the most opportune time and also to be in the most opportune time for the air carriers to be able to tolerate it.
Senator Larson, did you have a question?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Warren. I'm wondering if you can, as I look at the both the southeast flow configuration and the northwest flow configuration, and just for the committee's information, the space on the left-hand side of each picture where you see the roadway, which is Cedar Avenue, that the area to the left there where you see residential neighborhoods, that's entirely within my district. And so you can understand that that we are very concerned about all operations at the airport because it impacts us probably more than any other area in the state. Is it possible for you to tell me either today or get me this information as it relates to the number of operations to each arrow under the different airflows? I'm interested to know, you know, for example, when you have takeoffs on 22, you know, what number that is. That would be great for me to have that information for each of the arrows that you have on the two pages. Thank you.
Mr. Warren.
Madam Chair, Senator Larson, I can run through some numbers that are based on our modeling to give you order of magnitude, understanding that a lot of this will depend on how air traffic runs and what the fleet schedule is and all this. But the order of magnitude, I think these numbers are representative and in visual flight conditions as well, so the better visibility conditions, which we hope to be able to operate the majority in. In the southeast flow, runway 22 arrivals, so from the northeast there, the red arrow, we would expect round numbers about 130 to 135 arrivals on that runway out of a total of 735 operations in a average day at that time of the year. On runway 17, order of magnitude, we're looking at about 600. So 80% of the traffic in that flow condition would be arriving over on runway 17 and about 20% coming in on runway 22. Departures on runway 22 to the southwest would only be about 5. And the far majority of them, the 730 roughly, would be on 12 left. And we're trying to keep as much, obviously, in the existing footprint as possible. Those are the southeast flow numbers. In the northwest scenario, the arrivals stream to 30 right, so in our pretty much existing configuration, is about 645 to 650 round numbers would be arriving on 30 right, and about 88 would be arriving on runway 35, which is how we use it today. Departures in this configuration, it's very problematic. Almost all of the departures, 730, would be off of runway 35, and 5 roughly would be off of runway 4 to the north to the southwest, or I'm sorry, northeast. The 730 departures on 3-5, there are some management strategies that the FAA is hoping to employ, which actually would get the departure aircraft pretty close within, say, a mile of the airport back into their normal routing, so that the most noticeable visual impact would be within a mile of the airport, and then after that they're on their way for departures.
Senator Larson.
And Madam Chair and Mr. Warren, I presume a significant, as I think about how air traffic works today, a significant amount of traffic that is turning to the west or south will likely impact Richfield residents the most.
Mr. Warren?
On a 35 takeoff to the north. That be accurate?
Mr. Warren?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair, Senator Larson, the departures on runway 35, is that the question?
Yeah.
Most of those would be routed up probably to the northwest and to the northeast. It would be real difficult for them to bank and turn that hard to get over the Richfield area.
Okay. Thank you.
Madam Chair, the only summary, I guess, that I was going to do in your last slide was just try to capture the essence of the project that we've been kind of keeping this section of pavement together with luck and Band-Aids, if you will, and in the interest of safety and trying to make this repair in the least impacted scenario. There's a very bad scenario that if the pavements would come apart in the middle of summer and we don't have a contractor on board, that there's a very protracted impact here trying to get it fixed. And this is an opportune time. There's no good time, I'm sure, to do these projects, but this is the opportune time. And there is not a do-nothing scenario here, not that any of us that know these pavements would be comfortable with. I'd be happy to answer any other questions.
Okay, are there other questions or comments? Senator
Madam
Vickerman.
Chair, this won't bother me because I'm way down south, but how much more noise is going to be coming over some of these houses? In the paper today, they were kind of concerned about the noise. As the noise, I suppose, is going to be someplace. Planes go here or there.
Mr. Warren, could you just summarize where the different noise patterns that are going to be going on during the construction that will be different from who experiences the most noise now? Yeah. I think that would be a good summary for us at this point.
Madam Chair, Senator Griffin, when we talk about noise, just to be clear, noise contours are based on very complex, you know, long-duration type events. This event being a two-month event, really the noise we're talking about is the frequency of individual aircraft. Nothing that here that would even show in a noise contour, for example, if you would put this into our mapping. So with that clarification, sir, again, I would just say, as I mentioned earlier, that the most noticeable impact here will be in the corridor from the end of the new runway north up to downtown Minneapolis between I-35W and Hiawatha. They'll be climbing out and climbing down, if you will, as they go to the north and come from the north in that area, and then also runway four approaches over Highland Park would be the most noticeable area where we've got things that people aren't used to seeing.
But, Mr. Warren, the people in those neighborhoods will notice a difference for those few months that the airport is constructing the new runway. They will, even though it's not a permanent factor in the noise contours for noise mitigation, for example, nevertheless, people are going to say, what is that?
Madam Chair, you're correct. And in fact, we've been working with the noise operating committee here. I just left a meeting there earlier where we're working with the communities through this committee to be able to see what's the best way to communicate the way that the cities want us to communicate with the residents that are in these areas so that we can properly appraise them of the expected impacts as well as communicate the progress of the project and other things that they may be interested. So, but you are correct. There will be people that will notice a difference.
Madam Chair, may I just expound a little bit? My whole life has been tied to noise. I was hired 30 years ago, more than 30 years ago, as the first noise manager. I think to be really straight up about this, and I think Gary's done a very good job of describing the project and impacts, but if you live north of the airport, off the end of the north-south runway, you're going to see not an increase. You're going to see a dramatic increase in the frequency of overflight of aircraft taking off and departing over the airport northbound toward downtown Minneapolis. That is going to be a significant noticeable event for people who live in South Minneapolis along Cedar Avenue northbound. And there's just no other way to say it, in my view. It's just complete disclosure. It's going to be noisy, and it's going to be a level of aircraft frequency that those folks have not been accustomed to ever. To the south, turning back to Senator Vickerman's question, to the south, you're going to see, I think, substantial departure traffic. Not so much arrival traffic. You'll see airplanes taking off toward the south on runway 17, this new runway on the west side of the airport. And those departures will be fanned out over Eagan and down toward the river, turning westbound along the Minnesota River. But there's going to be a significant increase in the overall level of activity from what folks are experiencing there today. So we're anticipating to get significant noise complaints from residents in these two areas in the late summertime period. There's no question about it. Trying to do is work with the Noise Operations Committee, which is a citizens group that works with us, to make certain that elected officials, community leaders, citizens groups, and so forth, full understanding, expectation of what's going to happen. So we have no way of we don't know how else to operate the airport safely and still get this repair accomplished as quickly as we can. Those are the facts, and that's where the impacts are. Senator Larson asked the question about his community in Richfield because you literally see the homes right along Cedar Avenue. I think there's going to be a clear notice of increased traffic on that runway. There will be increased noise, but I think that the sideline noise impact, Senator Larson, is going to be less dramatic than the overhead noise of departures north of the airport or directly south of the airport. So there's no question there's going to be a shift. It's temporary, but we are prepared for a significant response from the community.
Senator Larson?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Vickerman, certainly.
I like your time frame. I could live with it if I had to live with it for 2-3 months, but if you were stringing this out over a year, then people might react. We want that airport done because it's an important thing coming on here in year 2008, and I want to be sure everybody's safe when they land at that airport. And Senator Day, you should be listening.
Madam Chair, if I may, Senator Vickerman, Gary can't say this, but I can, and so I will. Gary Warren is about the best there is at this business of doing runway construction. He has a track record of 15 to 20 years of delivering projects on time and on budget, and we build into the kind of the equation some rain days and bad weather days and so forth. I have full confidence that this is going to be about a 2-month project, and we're going to push aggressively to get this thing wrapped up sooner because there's no question. Our phones will be ringing off the hook. We know that. We want to get this thing done and get those airplanes back to operation as quickly as possible. And I think that Gary and our staff and the contractors that we work with on this project will get this task done properly.
Senator Larson, then Senator Gerlach. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Mr. Hamill. And that sort of confirms as I now look that that in fact, it will be ground traffic that will impact perhaps the eastern portion of Richfield more than overflight, but it's really the South Minneapolis folks
Yes. That
will, and even stretching as the planes fan toward the St. Louis Park, Edina, and western suburbs that way. And members, it will be significant. I, for the purposes of sort of a general idea of where my house is, if you follow the 422 runway, that is the only runway that goes over that area of homes on the left side. I live probably 10 blocks on the other side of the highway there of Cedar. And in the 98-99 year, that was very significant. And I don't remember the number of flights, but it was literally you would see the first, you'd see the plane coming, and as soon as in fact, it had cleared its space. The next one was coming, and there will be a significant quality of life issue for those 2 months for folks. So I know that you will, but I hope that the public information campaign is aggressive because I think if people do know that it's, a time span, that's part of what got us through, and ours was a 2-year time span, but it got us through that knowing that ultimately it was temporary and it was for purposes of safety.
Suggest that if families are planning vacations, and this sounds facetious and humorous, but in fact it's not. If families are planning vacations in these communities, it would be great to take a vacation in late August for about 2 weeks, and that would at least help alleviate some of the discomfort.
Senator Gerlach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You don't have to answer this now in the committee, but I'm just hoping that after we're done here, if I could spend just a couple of minutes, because I didn't want you to escape, but the Noise Oversight Committee meeting that you had earlier, I know, was to discuss some things that the FAA had some proposals to remediate the disputes and such with that on those
Fine.
Tracks, and you know what this is about. So I just wanted to say, if you could hold on a little bit afterwards, I'd like if you could just take a few minutes and brief me on the results of that. I'd appreciate that very
sure.
much. Thank you.
Senator Roebling.
Madam Chair, we can look at the bright side, too, because there's an upside for the people who won't be having the planes coming over them for 2 months. And so we have to keep that in mind, that there's a flip side for somebody else.
It averages out.
They get a holiday.
Senator Pappas?
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Don't bring it over my...
It's not possible to move the construction schedule later in the fall to the time that people are starting to close their windows.
Mr. Warren?
Madam Chair, Senator Pappas, the difficulty about that is as we work closer into, as we get into October, the days are getting shorter and the nighttime temperatures are not conducive to curing concrete. And we've moved it because the airlines also wanted us to move it as far that direction as possible to get out of their peak. And we have it as far as we feel comfortable with because we do have to have a proper cure time to get this done.
Are there any other questions for Mr. Hamill and Mr. Warren? Well, we'd like to thank you for making yourselves available today and appreciate that courtesy, and we will call upon you again, I'm sure, to come back and talk to us about other issues about which we have oversight.
Madam Chair, thank you. Our members, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you very much.
There being no further business, the committee is adjourned.
So is it a blessing or a curse?
It's
got to
be.
It's got to
be.
All right.
Well, I'm planning on being
good.
I don't land.